All right, well, we'll make a start. This is Tuesday, the 6th of August at 10:30 with Frank Hilton. Frank went to Roseville Agricultural College and graduated with an RDA in 1942. We're recording this at his home in Happy Valley, and we're going to be talking about his life at Roseworthy. Now, Frank, you were there at Roseville Agricultural College from 1939 to 1942,
yes,
and graduated with an RDA, and you got the gold medal in the beginning of 1942. Now, you'd like to tell us about how you came to go to Roseville. Why did you go there, and what were your first impressions?
Well, I was at Herbrae, of course. No, I went to Herbrae for 3 years, and I didn't have a leaving. So I did my leaving at PAC, and then from there I sat for the entrance exam and got the Adelaide scholarship. There were six scholarships, and one was for Adelaide, you see. And we did the scholarship exam for 2 days after Christmas when the college was vacant. And we had an exam, as well as practical. We went out and talked to the various heads of departments and that sort of thing.
And you started, in around March of 1939?
Yeah.
Did you start in around March 1939?
Yes, yeah. And the war broke out in September that year.
Mm. And what were your first impressions of going to Roseworthy?
Well, I was very keen and very scared. We were terrified of the initiation ceremony, but it wasn't anything really to worry because there was a master in charge. But I was in a double room up the top of the stairs with Dave Mack, and he and I were quite good pals. But my best pal was a boy named David Barlow, who was killed in the Air Force. And yes, but I was very, very keen, and my very first job was with a boy named Kellett. First day practical, we went up to the poultry and we cleaned out all the single hen testing pens, rows of them, because they no longer use them, you see. But we had to clean all these out. And I was so keen, I had to finish by dinner time. I used to work too hard and too fast, and I made mistakes, and that's why I never got good work marks.
You talked about your initiation. What involved the initiation when you went to Roseworthy?
It was some rather rude questions and some... and just a series of questions and things. We were stuck up on a table with all these kids around us, all these students. And it really, in the end, was quite harmless because the master in charge wouldn't let anything rough go on.
And did you have a steeplechase?
Oh, yes, we were in the steeplechase. Yeah. And I was quite a good 220 runner, and I was one of the favourites in the steeplechase, but I ran too fast. And I was worn out by half time and didn't finish up too well. Mm-hmm. But I always remember
We are resuming the tape with Frank Hilton on Tuesday, 6th of August at 10:45, with his time when he was at Roseville Agricultural College. Now, Frank, we're talking about initiation and your work around the college and so forth. Now, you talked about your accommodation in the main building, only two of you in that room there. Can you tell us a bit about the accommodation, what the beds were like and that sort of thing?
Accommodation?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I was in a little room upstairs on the top of the stairs on the right with a boy named David Mack. One interesting little tale, if I can tell it. During the fowling season, from my bedroom window, I could see the stableman with the mares. And I could see that he was tending to a mare. And I went down there with him and helped him. And that was a great thrill for me to see a mare born. But I was watching through the window until it happened.
Frank, you talked about the horses and how they has two groups of students. One which went down to feed and look after the horses in the morning, and then those who went to work at 7 o'clock as a changeover. Could you tell us a bit about that?
The day.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, in the first thing in the morning, you had to be up at 4:30, and the dairy boys had to bring the cows in, and the stable boys had to get the horses in. There were about 100 horses altogether. They all had to be tied up and fed and groomed. And they had to be ready by 7 o'clock when the teamsters arrived. And the farm manager allotted little slips with the teams on them. And you had to go around and whoever was... There was a lot of fallowing done, of course, every day. There'd be 3 or 4 8-horse, occasionally 10-horse teams went out fallowing, or that was one of the big jobs going right through every year.
But were the ploughs out in the paddock already, and you just had to walk the horses out there and then couple them up?
Yes, they walked out in 2 rows of 4, and then you brought them round, coupled them up in a single row, except when you're doing the fences. Generally, when you started and you did the fences, the workmen came and did that in case you hit the fence. But in some of the big paddocks, it used to take 30 minutes to get around the paddock. And the assistant farm manager, he came out to see us every day. But he would turn up at your shoulder, and you never knew he was coming. You're always conscious of him. But we did do a lot of work with horses. And of course, during the hay making, we were carting in big loads of hay. It was 5 horses, two in the shaft, 3 in the outer hames. And you had to drive it in right around this implement shed and finish up on the scales exactly on them. And if you missed them, you had to go around, and everyone was watching you. It was you just got one wheel off, and there's nothing you could do. You had to circle and go around again, because every single thing that was harvested was recorded, you see, and in the books there.
You said that earlier on that they always had 2 years of fodder conserved ahead of time,
yes,
like silage and hay. What do you think that was?
Yes, well, Dr. Callahan was a great believer in fodder conservation. He liked to store enough for the next year and another year in reserve. And so when we had a good year, which we did in our first year, we had this huge harvest, which started with the silage, the paddock silage, which was done in stacks, and also cereal hay was cut and chaffed and blew up to the top of the big silo at the dairy. One day when I was up there, I put a pitchfork through my toe. I had to be taken to Gawler to have an injection. That was one of the incidents. I made a move in. But then, of course, we did the oat and hay, and that all had to be stooked by hand in the upright stooks. And and of course they finished up by storing a lot of grain as well, and that it went into the grain shed, you see. And then of course the main harvest took place.
And was that before Christmas or after Christmas?
No, that we tried to get it done before Christmas, because if we could get it done before Christmas, we'd get an extra day for Christmas. Because for Christmas holidays, Christmas wasn't really part of the holidays. But if we could only get the harvest done, and everyone was on their toes to try and get the harvest finished before Christmas, and then we'd come back and after that, they'd finish up by doing the straw and that sort of thing.
When were the exams?
Well, the exams were after you'd had your Christmas holidays, and we all came. That was sort of more in February. That was the end of term exams. There were two exams, one in mid-year, one in the early in the new year, you see.
When were your last lectures? Was that before harvest started?
Well, right up. It all depended on the rainfall, the fodder and everything. So it could, because sometimes they cancelled all the lectures during the harvest. And you had all the routine work to do as well as the extra harvest work.
Were you still able to get through the academic work required for that year?
Well, I think a certain amount of academic work we probably missed, because which why I think we had a whole degree. We did an enormous amount of practical work. There must have been some things that we missed out on, but I liked the system of one day in, one day out. One day you're in at lectures, and then you went to sport after that, and then the rest of the second years, they're out doing practical. But when we were out, we were always in charge of the third years. And the third years were really in charge. We wouldn't dare disobey them, especially when there was a big group working in the paddock. The third year was in charge, and you did what you were told.
So take us through the routine of the day. Was this a 7 o'clock start, or what was the...
Yes, well, if you're on farm work or V&O or anything like that, you started at 7. You had to be in at breakfast sharp on 6:30, and then be up at the farm by 7. That was to say V&O, the farm, and the sheep, poultry. If you're on early work, you had to be ready to start at 5 o'clock. The machine started at 5 in the dairy, and the stable boys had to be grooming their horses by 5 o'clock. So that a good team met the others coming back. That was the big aim. Each day, if you're on early work, you tried to meet the day people coming to work. You're a good team.
Would you have a break for lunch? Hmm? Did you have a break for lunch?
Oh, yes. Unless you were way out in the paddock and the lunch was brought to you, and the horses had their nosebags brought, and it was a cold lunch, but we had a thing full of tea, cold tea, and cake, and always frits and sauce and things like that. Sometimes we used to work it, we'd make a little fire and warm the tea up, but that would be only in the... in the dry weather, wet weather.
Did you think you were well fed while you were there?
Yes, the food was good. It was nearly all the food was produced on the cottage, except I think for the bread that came in with the baker. But all the, you know, the milk and the eggs and the meat and the butter and cheese, everything, was produced on the cottage. Mm. And they killed their own meat. And
What sort of meals did you have? Mm? What sort of meals did you have in the dining room?
Well, because we did have the... The servants, what do you call them? The
orderlies?
The orderlies. They waited on us. And that was one of the wonderful things about the college. We didn't make our own beds or swept our own rooms, but we still had to be at work early, you see. But, no, the meals were good. Of course, there was a big vegetable garden. And we had a turn at helping them. And... I always remember them. They lived at Gawler, and about 10 to 5, they had all the tools cleaned and put away, sitting on their bikes, and they're waiting for the big bell to go. We could hear the big bell all over the college, and they'd be off into Gawler.
Where was this bell?
In the kitchen, just outside the kitchen.
Oh yeah.
I think the kitchen staff operated the bell. You see.
Yeah.
Another interesting little sideline. At the kitchen, we had cats. They were the kitchen cats. And on the farm, we had dogs, but they never met. The kitchen cats were very savage.
You said you used to have like one day's lectures and then one day work. So the lectures started at 8 o'clock?
No, the lectures started... around about 8, I suppose. We had to wait till the staff had their breakfast. We had our breakfast with the... Oh, no, the early workers who came back, they had their breakfast with the staff, that's right. But everyone else had breakfast at 6:30.
Even when you're on lectures?
Mm.
Yeah. And so lectures started at 8, and what was the routine? Every hour, or...? Was there a lecture every hour, or what was the routine?
Yes, there was a lecture every hour and a smoko in between. And so the common room was used for first year lectures, but the big lecture room was for the third years, you see.
Yeah.
And because we had a routine of lectures during the week, so there were visiting lectures. The most boring person was the wool classer. His name was Codrington, and he gave us the wool classing for a big station, and it was very boring. And the veterinary surgeon, he was also our army vet.
Who was that?
Dr. Smith, Mr. Smith, Major, he became Major Smith when we went into the cavalry camp.
So he stayed there during the war?
He was, I don't think he had to join up, he was the vet for, he came sort of one day a week and lectured to the first years and the third years in turn, you see.
Oh, yeah. He was also the vet for the army, for the horses and stuff.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
The army cavalry. Yeah.
Now, the lectures, you said, it started at 8, they changed every hour, and then what, they went from 8 to 12 and then 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock? Is that what happened?
1 to 5.
5 o'clock, yes. And that was, and you had a routine of, what, 2 days 1 week and 3 days the other?
No, it was sort of 3 days. Saturday morning, we had... carpentry by visiting carpenter, but often that used to fall on the weekend when you had leave, so you sometimes missed that.
Yeah.
But we if we had leave, we could go into Gawler with the mailman, he always used to go in twice a day and catch the train at Roseworthy Station, see. And so it was only possible to get leave once a month.
And that started what? That started Friday night, did it?
Yes, you could go Friday night and come back Monday morning.
All right.
So you missed the first lecture Monday morning.
Yeah. And you went home for that leave, is that what you did? When you're on leave, you went home?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Right. With the lectures, you said that they were like every second day, and then you had exams in middle of the year. What about a study period? Did you have a study period during the day at night time?
Yes, the study at night was very strict. It was from 7 to 8:30. You had to sit somewhere. You could sit in the common room, and sometimes we'd sit in the museum, and or you'd go into the lecture room, or you could stay in your own room, but you had to sit still. They didn't care what you did, you could read a book. But the officer on duty used to come around and tick you off, and that was a good chance for a bit of tutorial work to be done, if you want to ask him questions, you see. Mm. But I think that was a wonderful idea. You didn't have, like at high school, you got set homework, but there the homework was what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. During.
What was your favourite subject that you did?
Well, I was very good on biology. It's rather funny that in the biology exam, I knew every bit of it off pat. And the biology lecturer said to me, he said, if you'd read your paper, well, you would have got 100%. You answered the whole three questions when you only answer one. I found agriculture very interesting, because Dr. Hutton took first year agriculture and he went through all the crops in the world. And he was the plant breeder, you see. But he was a lovely bloke.
And you took your own notes during
the... Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You see, as I say, we didn't have any textbooks apart from the Journal of Agriculture. And I enjoyed the Journal of Agriculture, and it was sad when they eventually cut it out.
Did you visit other farms and other places to learn how other people did things?
Visit?
Did you visit other farms?
That was something we didn't do. We had no petrol. And June 3rd year, we went down to the Southern Hills to a two-day trip. And we saw the molybdenum experiments at Meadows, where they had lateritic soils. And the clover didn't respond to super. And so they set out these trials to try and find out, what was it loam? Or was there a missing element? And there's an interesting story that somebody noticed where a steel-tired dray had driven over the ground. There was a response, and they guessed it was molybdenum. And so they tried it out, and they finished up that 3 ounces of molybdenum trioxide, I think it was used per acre. And that was mixed in with the super, and it made a marvellous result. And that was a world first. The experiments were carried out by the Wade Institute, of course. Mm.
So what other aspects did you have? Animal husbandry lectures, like on pigs and poultry and beef and sheep?
And the other, yes, well, you took it in terms of in each department. You did a week on poultry, a week on gardening, a week on V&O. You had to do all the pruning and that. It helped a little bit with the wine making when it was on. And of course, shearing was a big occasion, and everybody had to help with that. Another interesting thing, when I was first there, they had one old mare there. It was past her time. She was had a great big fat belly. And they every boy in the college came out to see the dissection of this horse. And when they opened her up, she had a bag full of sand.
Yeah.
And but that was the only time when every student in the college was called in. I did it around about 10:30, 11 o'clock, so that they could get all the other work was finished, you see.
Did you enjoy working with particular staff members on when you're on outside work?
Yes, mostly. I didn't like the stable woman. He was a nasty man. He gave me naught for it one day because I swore at him. And, but he couldn't stand any nonsense. He reported me and I got naught. And it was very unfair. We had to groom down to the hocks, each horse. And I'd left a tiny little bit down low and I said bullshit to him.
No, that's not good. With the mules, we should go back to mules again. Did you was it a routine, like you had certain things on certain days, or did it just depend on what was in the garden and what was being killed
Yes, occasionally we got fish on Friday because we did have a few Catholic boys, and on Sunday, because we had compulsory church every Sunday, they took the farm manager's sulky into Gawler. That was a big privilege. And because of them, we occasionally had fish on a Friday. But otherwise, it was products of the, you know, our chops and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Products of the farm.
Where did you go to church? You said you all had to go to church. Where was that?
In the common room.
Oh, the big common room. Yes. Oh, yeah.
The chapel was built after I left. Yeah. But we all donated towards that, and I've been there and seen the list in there. And my best mate, a boy named David Barlow, we were real pals, and he was killed in the Air Force.
Yeah, the chapel was finished in the 50s, wasn't it? Built in the 50s, early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from there. What about sport? I think you said you're a bit of a cricketer and rifles.
Yes, I mainly was I got the job of being a marker in the rifles down the pit, but I did always have a shot at the end. And when I got into the army up in New Guinea, when we were moving camp, the CO found a box of ammunition. He said, "Let's go down the range and shoot these off," and I did very well, because I was the radar mechanic. You see, I was logically known as Sparks. Sparks can shoot. And they were most surprised. They didn't realise I'd been in a rifle shooting club.
What about your cricket?
Well, I got a pocket for cricket. That was my only achievement with sport. And I was on the cricket committee, you see. But I was a slow leg break bowler, and it was rather funny. Years later, I was playing cricket with some boys, and the inspector said to me, "Drop your left shoulder." And you know, I always had, when you're bowling a leg break, you've got to get your arm over, you see. And I thought, why didn't they tell me that before? Why didn't they tell me it at the PAC? Drop your left shoulder.
Yeah. With the cricket, was that what was it like during summertime? Was it a bit hard with the harvest going on and people being on leave and that sort of thing?
Yes, the Saturday afternoon we went out and we played the district cricket, like Salisbury and Gawler and Wasleys, and we were allowed to have the sharabang thing, which was pulled with two horses. They had two Percheron horses which could trot, you see. And there was one boy, Tufty Todd, he was called. He was a wizard with horses. And when we went to the pictures or anything, where they put the seats on the back of the wagon, and Tufty Bow, the two veterans, and no one else was allowed to touch them. And when we got into Gawler, Tufty put the horses in. Well, a lot of the hotels still had stables, you see. And if we were going to a dance, he'd go up there and see his horses are all right. I always remember once when the horses turned inside out and they were looking at us. He wasn't worried. He just whipped them up, got them back in, and away we went. That was Tufty Toll.
You know, this is during the war, so how did the war impact on the college life in terms of, I guess, he's talked about petrol, how did it affect the college?
Yes, well, you see, we did have tractors, but we couldn't use them. Everything was done with horses. And they had the one utility that went into Rosewood every day, and but there just wasn't. Well, the dairy, of course, was one of them, was the electricity, and to begin with, the dairy was in the old stables, an old English design stables with a big silo and everything, and half the cows were milked by hand and half of them by machine, and then they separated the milk.
You talked about having electricity. Was there lights out time? Was that from a generator, or was it from the mains power?
No, from the mains.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any lights out. I think most boys were keen to get to bed because we all had to be up early. Everybody had to be at breakfast by 6:30. If you didn't get there, you didn't get breakfast. You had jam and cream.
And was it cold? Was it cold in the in your rooms? Mm. Was it cold? Well, there was no heating in your rooms, was there?
No.
So
no.
Was it cold at night time?
Mm. During the summer, we put our beds out in the veranda. The corridors got a big veranda, and they used to make our beds for us out there.
Oh,
and we didn't seem to worry about the cold in bed.
Mm. They talk about the corridor not always having a ceiling. Did it have a ceiling? The corridor block, did that have a ceiling when you were there?
Oh, yes, a ceiling and a veranda, you see. And you could sleep outside if you wanted to.
Yeah, some years before there, when it was built, there was no ceiling.
Was it?
It used to get pretty cold in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I changed it. Now, Frank, I noticed that you were on the student magazine every year you were there.
Yes.
You're on the committee. Can you tell us a bit about the student magazine?
Yes, well, I had to encourage people to produce something. We had one boy, he was killed during the war, a boy named Bagginal. He came from England, I think. He wrote some poetry, which was extremely good. But I did a series about each of the students, something like you have in the book. I think I started that idea. I photographed everyone and put them in.
Yeah, I noticed that, because that's the first time I've seen it in the student magazine. Yeah. It's quite a good way of all the portraits and a bit about what they're going to do, and a bit of fun sort of.
I had a dreadful name of Bot. Called Botulism. And about halfway through the war, some of the boys joined up, and but we only. I think we only had 14 on final day. And of course, speech day came after we joined up and we got permission to have the day off, you see. But I got in as an electrician and I was stationed to a mobile workshop at Warradale. And one day the CO called me up. He said, "Did you read the notice on the board?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, you should have." He said, "I've posted you to Melbourne to do a radar course, Army volunteer, you know." And within a couple of days, I was on the train to Melbourne, doing the Melbourne Technical College in electricity and magnetism and so on. And that was a beautiful course, beautifully designed, all the textbooks, everything. highly skilled lecturers. They were civilian lecturers.
Mm. Did you meet up with any Roseworthy friends during the war?
I saw there were twin boys named Murray, I think they were. Were officers on one of the ships, and they were up in the galley. I was down front doing guard duty. Most ridiculous thing, being on a great big boat, and I'm way down the front. There's nothing I could have done if I'd seen a submarine. They'd just shout my head off, it would be too late. But that was my most dangerous time in the war, when I sort of went to New Guinea around about the time of the Coral Sea battle, and we were lucky enough to get through.
Uh-huh. Now, just get back to Roseworthy stuff. Frank, you did very well. You won the bronze medal, the silver and the gold medal while you were there. So was that hard to do? Did you work hard at it?
Very hard, all the time. I never stopped studying. In the second year and the first year, we had bookkeeping, which the housemaster took. And the boy who was second to me, a boy named Dave from Rosley's, a lovely boy, he had done leaving bookkeeping, and he got practically full marks, and I was struggling. And also I didn't like wool casting, this old man Codrington, and he beat me that term, but I managed to pick up and still got that silver medal that year. But that was the only term I was beaten.
And you were keen to get a scholarship at the end of any of your Roseley.
Yes, I wanted to get the John Ridley scholarship, and I was really keen to get that. But they didn't give it to me until the war was over. And an interesting story: my wife and I were going up to Hilltown to see our relations there, and we're sitting there reading the newspaper, and she said, "Look, your name's here." And down the bottom, Frank Hilton has won the John Ridley Scholarship. And I didn't know.
That was to do ag science at the Adelaide University, was it?
Yes, it was. It was only a small scholarship, actually, to help you with the ag science degree. But when I finally got out, towards the end of the war, things were very slack, and they wanted to free a few university students who could be spared. Otherwise, the university would be swamped, you see. And I managed to put, my father pulled some strings at Herbray and got me out to go to the university. By the time I'd travelled from Queensland to Adelaide and been discharged, I was a week late. It took me a long time to pick that up, but my wife met me. At the station, there was an officer called an RTO, a RI ticket officer. He was stationed there to handle any troops passing through, you see. And we asked him to be a witness while we were engaged. And a week later, we were married. I came out of a zoology lecture and was married 2 hours later.
All right. How did you find the university lectures compared to the Roseworthy lectures?
Very hard, because I was very poor on physics. I was all right in chemistry and botany and zoology, but I was pretty weak on parts of physics, you see. I eventually got through it on a sup. But old Kerr Grant, I never heard of him. He was professor of physics. He had very little control in his lectures, and the boys up the back used to mess around him. And but there was a second set of lectures at night with another bloke who was much stricter. And if you could stay on and do the late lectures, you learn something.
Just get back to your Roseworthy days again. What was it like for the seasons? Was it did you have dry periods, or was there a drought on, or was it very wet, or what was the seasons like when you were at Roseworthy?
Well, as I say, that first year was a wonderful season, and when we had the big harvest, and we worked and worked right through and didn't do any lectures. But I set myself, we still had to study at night, and I set myself a project to go right through a book on organic chemistry and taught myself organic chemistry, which was a big help when I got to the university.
Did you do much chemistry practical work when you were at Roseworthy?
Very little. Hickenbottom was the lecturer in chemistry as well as wine chemistry, you see. But we didn't do much practical at all, which was a bit of a struggle when I did practical in first year at uni.
So with the with your academic work, you talked about we've got your you've got your final results here,
yeah.
And we've got agriculture, animal husbandry, dairy, fruit culture, viticulture, and you did very well. You got first in all of those except your outside work. So you did very well academically, and so when you got the gold medal, the outside work didn't count towards that, or?
Well, yes, it all counted. The whole lot added up.
Oh, yeah.
And I had the highest mark.
Highest aggregate in the end. Oh, yeah. And there was.
That's why we tried so hard at the work marks.
Yeah.
I used to do all sorts of cunning things. I'd try and get on the pigs because the pig man liked me. Things like that.
All right. You've got here remarks. It says here, he has completed a very meritorious course, awarded the gold medal as Ducks of the College, the Old Collegians Cup for proficiency in agriculture and animal husbandry, and the Morfitt Prize for daring. So you did very well, and that was awarded to you on the 3rd of February 1942, signed by Dr. Alan Callaghan. So that was a...
Yes, well, that's, we got leave from the army. Now, I think my CO saw this. I showed him my gold medal, and he was quite interested. And when I was stationed down at Warradale, I think the captain down there knew about my record, and because they were calling for army-trained artificers, you know.
Yeah.
And I was chosen because of my record to do this radar course, you see. It was an enormous amount of study in that. But I learnt those circuits backwards. It was rather interesting. When we had study periods in the lecture room, and I sat next to this nice boy, gentle, quiet boy, who was very slow, and I used to help him. I used to go over and over and over it with him until I knew the stuff myself, you see. And lo and behold, he didn't pass. But they couldn't let him go, because he'd been in all the secret stuff, you see. So they put him in the storeroom, and he was quite happy.
Uh-huh.
But there's no doubt about it. If you want to learn something, you try and tutor someone. I did it later, when I was at Scots College, I did a bit of tutoring.
With the you went into Roseville. What was your goal? You wanted to get this scholarship and do ag science. Did you have a particular career goal in mind when you went to Roseville?
No, I imagine I had the idea of being an agriculture advisor. That was, but they cut them out in the end. They were sent to various parts of the state to advise farmers, But by the time I got right through, they started to cut them out, and they relied more on big field days and things like that.
And so you went and did ag science, and then you went teaching after that.
Yes.
Did you go teaching because the other jobs weren't around, or that you've decided because you're
back? Well, I was married and I had a child and a wife. And I had to get a job, and the education department let me in without going through the teachers' college, which was very rare. And I was appointed to New Erpa, because there was a house there waiting for me and a job waiting. And I enjoyed teaching those boys at New Erpa. They were conscientious, those Lutheran boys.
And you taught in New York, then you went to Scots College. So your whole career was in teaching in the end, in agriculture.
I did have 2 years off as a university lecturer, but I found I wasn't suited to that. I hadn't done enough biology and so on, and I went back to teaching.
With your teaching years, did you have many other roseworthy graduates who were also teaching?
No, I don't think so. I never became a member of the old scholars. I went to the old scholars reunion at the end of 25 years, I think it was. We had it in Adelaide. But I never carried on as an old scholar. I was out in the country, you know.
And what about your students? Did any of your students that you knew of went to Roseworthy that you taught?
Did we?
The students that you taught at schools, did any of those go back to Roseworthy that did the course? Mm. Can you remember many of those? Or
Some of them may have. When I was there, there was a Roseworthy boys in each year, and the Roseworthy boys did very well. The grounding they had, and a bloke named Butterfield became a veterinary surgeon, and he went on to Sydney afterwards. But two Fewhart boys, another one, yes.
Yeah. So let's just wrap up, I think, with your Roseworthy day. So. That's a fairly big time of your life, 3 years spent there.
Yes.
And you did a very good academic result from working hard. What would you think would be some of the main things that you took away from Roseworthy that you feel as though that changed your life, influenced your life?
Yes, well, when I left there, my family were very religious and very. My father threatened to take me away if I ever had a drink. he didn't like me smoking or drinking or anything like that. But I loved the 3 years I had there. I thought they were, a wonderful time because I was a quiet, shy, gentle little boy. And bit nervous, and I think Roseworthy brought me out of myself, because the camaraderie of the boys was marvellous. And at the meal times, we all sat together, mostly talked about the bolts of the horses and things like that. And I noticed there's something in there about one of your boys pulled up a line of fencing.
Yeah. I guess some of the other boys at the college were smokers and drinkers and so forth, so they had a different sort of background to you. Did you find that difficult, that they had different interests to you? Or
I did for a while, but the first dance we had, I didn't attend it. I couldn't dance, and I was never any good at dancing. I just couldn't do it. I even went to a dancing teacher in Adelaide, and he taught me to waltz. It was brutal. He kicked me and made me waltz, but I couldn't do it afterwards.
you went to the next dance?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about these dances that you had. Is this the dance every year? Was it
yes.
A certain time of the year? Or
yes.
Was this in the shearing shed or in the dining
room? No, it was in the main dining room.
All right.
And every night we had a bag of wheat, and we used to tear around the floor with the polish they put, the crystals, and we had the floor. And during that period, you weren't allowed in the dining room unless you had slippers on. Everyone had to wear slippers. And they went to a lot of trouble for that. Some girls stayed there, and they stayed upstairs and had a matron up there looking after them. and the boys had to find somewhere to sleep. They slept anywhere they could.
Was there, well, how many girls would come to the dances and stay overnight?
No, some of them did.
So you're talking about a lot of them, like 20 of them, or? You're talking about a lot of girls coming to stay?
Yes. So a lot of district girls came, yeah. Girls from Gawler and Wasleys, and one of our boys, Henry Day, married a Wasley's girl. She was a lovely girl. But the second time they found me a partner from Wasley's. But I was never any good at dancing. The little boy who came bottom of the work list, he was a brilliant little dancer. And I said, how can you dance like that? But he had this lovely little girl and they was whizzing around. I think you've got to have a rhythm in you to be any good at it.
Mm.
But a lot of these little local country towns, they all had annual dances and that. And the Roseworthy boys all used to turn up.
So you dances in Gawler and Wasley's and... Yeah. And
The Gawler Town Hall had dances fairly often.
Yeah.
And that's when we went in with the horse and the two patrons and the buggy thing. It took about 12 boys at a time.
Yeah. And what, you just go in and come back that same night? Yeah. What time would you get back?
Oh, boy. If you're on cows next morning, you only got 2 or 3 hours sleep. We're well after 12 before we get back.
Mm.
But then you had a few hours sleep and you'd have to get up and go way out in the paddock and get the cows.
Mm. You said about going to church on every Sunday. Yeah. Was there anything during the meal? Was there the say grace or anything like that? Was there during the meal times? Was there any sort of formal religious stuff during besides the church thing?
The grace and that. We didn't have grace or anything, no. But the various members of the local churches, like the Salvation Army, Church of England, Baptists, Methodists, they took it in turns of coming out to take the service. And everyone had to attend.
Yeah. So would the staff go there as well?
Only the housemaster.
Yeah.
Do you know, he could stand up and look around and he could say, someone's missing. And he'd go down that corridor and find them and bring them up. He had a wonderful memory.
Right. Frank, we're running out of time now, so we might wind it up. So thank you very much for this interview. And I'm sure that our listeners will hear these stories that you've told and will enjoy the history about Roseworthy. And there'll be a transcript done, so you'll be able to read it, what we've talked about this morning. So thanks very much for this morning interview. Okay, thanks a lot.
Right.